Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show with MC Lobster on how to use the infinite banking strategy to boost your investment gains. I'm Dan Breslin, host of the REI Diamond Show. Today's guest is MC Lobster of Valhalla Wealth Financial and also the host of the popular podcast show, Cashflow Ninja. MC and I, we're going to focus deep on a whole life insurance investment strategy that can help boost your real estate investment gains. And I know this is a little bit of a different direction than we normally do here on the show, so you may want to grab a pen and pad, grab a seat, and let's jump right in, shall we? All right. Welcome to the show, MC. How are you doing today?
Very well, and yourself, Dan. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're absolutely welcome. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking. So for the listeners who may not know who you already are, I did mention a few things in the introduction there, but please just kind of give a background about who you are, what you've done up to this point, what led you to this point, maybe a snapshot of the business that you're running today.
Sure, I'll be happy to. So my name is MC Lobster, and I'm originally from South Africa, not from the United States. I grew up in an extremely interesting time in the history of South Africa. I think it was about 14 or 15 where we changed and went from an apartheid regime to the release of Mr. Nelson Mandela at that stage, to him becoming the first democratically elected president in the country's history. So very, very interesting time that I grew up in. I attended university there. And after university, I traveled around the world quite a bit. I ended up in the United States with a backpack, a suitcase, I think $500, a sense of adventure and a sense of humor. And I ended up actually traveling quite a bit, and there was a nationwide city-based rugby league, national league, and I was a rugby player back in South Africa. So I played in this league. It was a great experience, met some fantastic people. While I was pursuing my career in rugby, I actually started my real estate investing. I actually purchased my first property in South Africa the first year I was out of university, buy and hold a single-family unit. But in the United States, I ended up falling into sort of a mentorship position where I worked for a very, very wealthy private real estate investor in Chicago. I wasn't smart enough at that stage to figure out that's what you have to do, is to find good mentors and learn from them. So it was definitely pure luck at that stage, but learned a lot, learned the business from the ground up, started basically turning around apartment units. They invested in very large multifamily unit buildings on the north side in Chicago. And started basically with turnaround apartments, painting, maintenance, just overall tasks to leasing apartments, getting my broker's license to eventually being part of the acquisitions team, analyzing deals, looking for deals, finding deals, and buying and selling buildings as part of this team. So really learned the business from them and learned a lot about wealth and how wealthy families operate, how they think, which was fantastic. So it was a very fortunate experience. After that, I ended playing representative rugby in 2007. I spent some time consulting with Fortune 100 and 500 companies as a consultant. And I came across a very, very powerful real estate strategy utilizing other products and vehicles to kind of turbocharge and boost investment gains in that time as an investor. So I kind of went into the financial planning and wealth management industry. 2 years ago, I started my own firm, Valhalla Wealth Financial, where we help individuals, families, small businesses, entrepreneurs, and investors build their wealth outside of Wall Street. And then I'm also the host of the Cashflow Ninja podcast, where we talk about how to create income streams from real estate, gold and silver, coffee farms in Panama, digital assets such as Bitcoin. So anything to do with creating extra income, an income stream across diverse asset classes.
Before we dive into the main topic of the interview here, You mentioned playing rugby, and I'm going to ask a question you probably don't get asked much. Was there some skill sets, character building, team building, responsibilities, things that are a little more esoteric that maybe were skills that you learned by having a career and playing rugby at an apparently high level, I'd assume, if you're doing this, traveling team and the whole nine? Were there some things that you could kind of take from your sports career that you say would help you today in your current life, MC? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question because absolutely. As a matter of fact, I implement the same principles that I implemented in my sporting career every day in my business. The first thing, of course, is the modeling technique where when I played rugby, in order to learn from other people and improve, I look at what the best players were doing in my position. I studied everything I could on them, on game film, cut-up tape, what they were doing off the field, their nutrition, their strength and conditioning, anything that I could get my hands on about these guys. And I do the same thing today in my business. I really still study what the wealthiest and families are doing out there with their money. I do look and study what wealthy individuals and successful people are achieving and try to model a lot of their behaviors. I think it was Tony Robbins that said that, you know, he's a big guy on the modeling technique as well, where if he's trying to learn a new skill set or trying to improve in an area, he goes out and finds someone that has mastered that area already. But rugby is, in my opinion, not biased at all since I play it, but the ultimate team sport and a fantastic game because you really learn what it is like to be part of a team and being part of a band of brothers where the guys next to you, because of its physical nature and its and the tension on the field, obviously, it's a really good bonding experience and you really know what it's part to be part of a team and have someone else have your back and you having someone else's back. And I still coach I still coach at Princeton University, and you know, from that perspective, I still learn so much from the game, part of building a successful high-performance team. Princeton is a Division I AA rugby program in the United States, so we're still trying to build a high-performance team in that regard as well. So I learn a lot from that that I can bring into my own business and build my own business and build a solid team around my own business. So, and then of course, you know, sport, obviously you learn how to learn from your mistakes because you're going to fail. It's a lot like life. There's a lot of disappointments and setbacks, especially at a high level, the injuries that come with it, the surgeries that come with it. So you learn how to take it on the chin, quote unquote, and just recover from setbacks and disappointments. Because in business, as you know, Dan, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. So rugby definitely prepared me a lot in that regard.
I was kind of thinking that the answer was going to be just like that. You know, not to a word, but you've articulated absolutely perfectly there. And I guess I'm not surprised to hear somebody like you hop on and say, yeah, I've modeled people and I look at the nutrition and I look at the practice habits. I look at their methods. I watch the tape. It's like the most studied people or the most successful people that I've seen and had the opportunity and pleasure to have on the show and then just meet and then and kind of even model myself through books and, you know, in the media and things of that nature for people who are maybe not as accessible as we are on our podcast shows. But that successful mindset of picking apart and learning from many different areas of success. So if I'm a real estate investor, MC, I'm not just learning from fellow real estate investors because that would be like a too narrow of a focus and staying in my lane. But just like you were able to take certain lessons and traits and skills, you know, some deep down hard to learn lessons like dealing with failure and having to recover from those setbacks in order to get to the next success playing rugby. It's like being able to kind of like translate the pieces of success, no matter where they're coming from, into your own life, I think is so important. I know it's been important for me to grow as a professional, as a real estate investor, as a person all around. So I know we kind of got off topic there a little bit. We'll steer back to real estate for the listeners who are probably getting frustrated with me right now. So we talked about the infinite banking strategy before we hopped on the call. Can you shed some light on that? And you can feel free to go in a little bit of a different direction if you need to.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. So the infinite banking strategy basically is a strategy that helps you reclaim the banking function within your own personal and business economy. Now, the infinite banking concept, there was a book written on it by Mr. Nelson Nash called Becoming Your Own Banker. And Mr. Nash said that everyone had to be in two businesses, the business that they're in, generating income, and then also in the banking business. Now, what he was saying wasn't necessarily that you have to go out and start your own bank, because that's not really realistic, but reclaiming the banking function within one's own life. The banking model is obviously an extremely powerful business model. Banks and financial institutions have been the power centers throughout centuries, for obvious reason that the model that they follow is so powerful. So what we teach and help clients implement is a cash flow management system that is based on the strategy that helps them to reclaim the banking function within their own life. Now, Dan, I will say this, that we have to, as investors and as business people, you know, we understand the power of systems and processes and automating these systems and processes. And that's the same kind of thinking that we have to engage in when we look at the strategy, because the strategy of putting this all together is actually utilizing a vehicle that is an insurance vehicle, a specialized insurance vehicle, and it's a vehicle that utilizes dividend-paying whole life insurance with a mutual insurance company. Now, some of your listeners may be rolling their eyes now just hearing this for the first time, because I certainly did. I was shocked to my core when I discovered this, because it has such a bad rap in the marketplace, and insurance in general has a bad rap in the marketplace. You know, everybody always makes fun on all the TV shows of the insurance salesman, right? So it really does have it, but the way that we have to look at it is, and from studying the wealthiest families, is that risk management is an extremely important part of how they structure their wealth plan and how they structure their own personal life and their business life. These guys would not take on a risk that they can transfer to someone else. So it's a very important lesson I learned from them. But back to the insurance vehicle. So in the banking system, just to give a brief overview of a very simplified banking model, you have a deposit side and you have a lending side. So, you know, the banks obviously offer interest on a deposit, what now, 0.001%, right? But on the lending side is when they really start making their money, because they're leveraging the money that comes into the system outside through the lending and turning it as many times as they possibly can. So they're multiplying their money, and they have many uses for the same dollar. Just to give you a brief example of how powerful the banking system is, when you deposit $10,000 in a bank account, and let's be generous, let's say the bank gives you 1% interest on that. Well, they're giving you about $100 for giving you having your money in their bank. On the other side, they're going to lend out that $10,000, and let's say they lend it out for 10%. Now, a lot of people would say through arbitrage, taking money that you're paying a certain interest for and utilizing it to generate a higher rate of return somewhere else would be around 9%. But if you really look at what just happened in this transaction, the only out-of-pocket expense the bank had was that $100. They didn't have the $10,000 out-of-pocket expense because the money came from the depositor. So at that stage, the $1,000 that they received from interest from lending the $10,000 at 10% minus the money that they're paying out, the $100 that they pay out 1% on that $10,000 actually is $900, so it's 900%. So that's why it's so powerful. Now, these principles can be implemented in your own life using the insurance product. And again, insurance is just another vehicle, like real estate, like commodities. You know, it all depends on the strategy of how you utilize insurance vehicles. You can utilize an insurance vehicle like a rich person, a poor person, or a middle-class person. As Robert Kiyosaki has taught, there's three ways of investing in all of those. And I can attest to that because I've invested in real estate and made a complete mess out of it because I was a horrible investor. And then I learned and increased my financial education. And eventually I was able to use different strategies to invest in real estate that actually produced a very good asset that provides monthly cash flow for me. So the reason why we use dividend-paying whole life insurance with a mutual insurance company is the following. There's a guaranteed growth on the money that you deposit on the deposit side. Then there's also, because it's a mutual insurance company, it's not a stock insurance company, it's not listed on the stock exchanges, it's managed with a very, very long-term range in view. Some of these companies have been around since the mid-1800s. You become a shareholder as a policy owner in the company, which provides you or positions you to enjoy dividends that the company pays out when they're profitable. So these companies, again, because they've been around so long, very, very, very well-capitalized institutions, they've paid out dividends for 100 years consecutively. There's one carrier that has paid out the same amount of dividends for the last 9 years, even throughout the last financial crisis. Because of the way that these companies are organized and structured and run, they didn't bat an eyelid during 2009, 2008, and 2007. And the other reason that we also use it is the growth inside this vehicle is tax-free. And the distribution through strategies are tax-free as well. This is also a private contract between you and the insurance company. It also offers asset protection. Now, as real estate investors, we know that we live in an extremely litigious society. It's going to get increasingly more litigious even if there's a downturn in the economy. So it offers asset protection. Please check with your asset protection specialist and strategist in your state that you live in, because all states, of course, are different in the way that they structure these and offers protection in these vehicles. So this is on the deposit side, but I think where it really dovetails really nicely with real estate investing is, Dan, on the other side of it is the lending side. And what mutual insurance companies do, you can access your cash value of your policy through a policy loan, not from your own cash value, but from the general account from the insurance company. Your cash value is collateral for the loan that you take. So what this means is there's two separate transactions. There's a deposit side, just like in the banking system, and then there's a lending side, where you borrow money from the general account of the insurance company. Most of them are around about 5% right now. So, in effect, what this allows you to do is have your money in one place growing, liquid, predictable, with certainty, tax-free, and on the other side, you get to leverage that wealth and that money that you've captured in this vehicle to go and invest in more properties and other investments that cash flow and redirect those cash flows back into your own personal economy, this system. So, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme strategy. It offers insurance. There's an insurance component out there. So that's very important to know. And insurance, as I've mentioned, the wealthiest families know the power of it. You always want to transfer a risk you don't want to carry on yourself. And we have a lot of things to protect. We have, you know, we have our human life value to protect. We have income to protect. We have our net worth to protect for ourselves and our families, and also our business partners in real estate. So it kind of gives a comprehensive financial foundation and a savings mechanism to that can be then leveraged and used to invest in other assets.
So, you know, in that example you gave, I'm borrowing the money at 5%. What would be my return or my dividend on that same money? I put $100,000 in, I immediately borrow it back out at 5%. But what amount of dividend, if it was a percentage, would take place on my $100,000 that's invested with the company right then and there?
Well, so a lot of these companies is between 6 and 8%. A lot of them are around 6 and 7 right now. It's very, very low interest rate environment. Some of the dividends that they're paying, when you benchmark the last 30 years, they're really at the low end because of the interest rate environment that we're in. But what it's done for me personally, and I have three of these plans personally, is it's forced me to become even a better investor, because when I'm borrowing at 5%, I've got to try and find a vehicle that gives me a 10 to 12% return in cash flow to make sense of the investment. So it's been a very good framework for me for decision making as well. And again, on both sides, it's two separate transactions. So you still have on the one side the money that's liquid, safe, and growing. And on the other side, you get to borrow it at 5%. But, and I just want to clarify this too, because there might be a little bit of misinformation in some internet sources out there. You don't borrow the money from yourself and pay yourself back. This is money that you borrow from the general account of the insurance company, and you participate indirectly in the profits from that general account by being a shareholder and receiving dividends.
So is it typical that my growth side on the deposit side might be 1% to 2% bigger than the percentage that I'm going to pay on the loan? Or is it going to be equal to in most cases? Or would I, in some cases, pay more interest on the loan side than on the return on my deposit in the insurance account?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I would say that because there's an insurance component that you're taking part of it too, it's really not apples to apples if you try to compare the arbitrage between the loan and the return. I think a way of looking at it is that the money that is caught up in this vehicle is accessible, it's liquid, and it's growing tax-free. And on the other side, the arbitrage that I would be looking at is borrowing the 5% and then investing in something else with a higher yield. I wouldn't try to compare it what I can borrow at necessarily with the growth that I'm getting in there, because there's another huge cost and wealth destroyer that's out there for a lot of people that affects your wealth, besides obviously taxes and inflation, fees and commissions paid to professionals, and interest paid to third parties. Opportunity cost is a very, very big cost. So there's three ways that you can obviously pay for something. The first way is cash. Well, if I just bought a property for $100,000, that $100,000 is gone. I have to start saving it up again. I can pay for it with credit by borrowing the $100,000. There's a cost to that too. The third way of purchasing something is by having your money in a vehicle like this, where it's safe, liquid, and growing predictably, and having the ability to access that money and leverage it and then purchase the asset that you're going to purchase and then repay it back into your own system. So it helps you kind of navigate that and eliminate the blown opportunity cost.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say the arbitrage would be the sole decision-making, but it would certainly, you know, shed some light on it, because when we talked about it earlier on in the example, we talked about $100 in cost, and then the bank is lending it out and making $900. But what we didn't acknowledge was administrative costs. And so I assume that these whole life insurance policies would also have administrative costs as well. So let's just take the three accounts that you have right now. Can you tell me what the lending side versus the deposit side, what that arbitrage would look like, and whether that's a positive 1% or 2% or a negative 1% or 2% in the accounts that you currently have and operate?
Yeah, so the way that I look at it, the one policy I'm using to build my company, and I always say this to everyone, the greatest investment that you're going to make, regardless of where you are in the world, is going to be in yourself. And if your business is generating and growing as well, that would be the place that I would invest it. I wouldn't look for someone or some other area to invest it outside of your control. So that's what I'm doing. I'm using it, investing in my own business, and my business is growing weekly and monthly. So to put an exact number on that as far as the returns and how the arbitrage between the two, that's going to be a little bit hard. I have to look at how my business is growing and,
not the return you're getting versus the loan. I'm talking about the money and the dividend that the insurance company is paying on one of your account versus how much you'd have to pay in interest to borrow from the same account. Just so we have a basis of, you know, what.
Okay,
what
so it's around 7%. So it's around 7% is what the dividend is, what I'm getting, and it's about 5% is the one that I'm borrowing at right now.
Yeah, and I point but, that I mean, out not to add that in or say, oh, here's this sexy return, but just to give you an idea, it's not in that example you just gave me there. It's not costing me more money to borrow the money back. So in a sense, I'm still doing better. Even if I put my $100,000 in something like this and then borrow it right back out and pop it into a property, and then obviously the return has to cover the 5%, make profit in addition to the 5%, but the money went into an account where maybe I'm making 1% to 2% already just based on the differences of those two interest rates right there.
Yeah, and of course there is an insurance cost to it too because it is an insurance vehicle. So it's not complete apples to apples, but I think what the concept does and what it helps you to do is have your money, $1 have multiple uses within your own financial system and your own personal and business economy, which is what banks do and what financial institutions do. So they try to get as many uses for the same dollar as they possibly can.
Cool. This is interesting. So when you first mentioned it to me, you know, I didn't know exactly which direction we were going, but I also did read the Nelson Nash book as well. And I remember thinking, wow, this is a great idea. I believe he's the guy who had a timber hauling business early on. Is that the same guy I'm thinking of?
Yes, that is the same guy. That is the same guy. And I mean, like for this, I'll just give you a couple of examples because maybe your listeners want to hear some of the examples of how clients and some people are using it. Here's a really, really neat way. There's a lot of real estate investors that has escrow accounts for their taxes that they pay out to the tax man on property taxes. Well, why, you know, if you can set up your own tax escrow account in a vehicle like this that captures that money and grows it for you, and then it allows you to, through a policy loan, to pay your taxes, repay that, and keep funding it and then pay the next tax bill, why wouldn't you do that instead of putting your money in the bank, which they're obviously using it and leveraging it, and paying the taxes for you? So instead of paying, you know, for instance, there's partners of mine that their tax bill of every year is about around $100,000. Well, $100,000 that they've utilized to put in a vehicle like this, they've now created an asset from money that will just be usually sitting in a bank and going out to and be paid in taxes. So there's a lot of different ways. You know, the big thing about it is we have to start to think like banks, act like banks, and execute like banks. So I look at my personal economy and my business, and I try to run as much as I possibly can through my own banking system. So it's changed the way that I look at things. Just as this example that I just used, for instance, the loans are also very flexible. That might be a question that your listeners have. Very, very flexible because the insurance company, they have your cash value and death benefit as collateral. So when you borrow the money, only the interest is due at the end of the year. So you can structure, there's a lot of flexibility. And I know when you're busy with flips, investment properties, turning around properties, buying, fixing it up, getting renters in there for a buy and hold strategy. There's some time periods there where there's not going to be cash flow coming in on a monthly basis, which this allows you to do as well, because instead of having to make a payment right away, you can purchase the property and then start paying the loan back when there's renters in and you start getting cash flow. So it's all about having control over your money and your cash flow in the strategy as well, which this allows to do. And I'll just say this too. This is not a magic bullet, and it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a diligent, disciplined strategy that dovetails really nice with other investments to kind of boost investment gains, having your money work in different places at the same time.
See, I'm not sure if we really touched on it in depth. We probably should have somewhere near the beginning. I think we might have like mentioned it periodically, and I'm sure a few people connected the dots, but this is a whole life insurance policy, cash. Am I correct in that?
Yes. So this is a dividend paying whole life insurance policy with a mutual insurance company. And I also say this for your listeners out there. If they're looking into something like this, make sure that the person that is helping you structuring this is an infinite banking practitioner, because this is a completely different way of structuring insurance. This is not the cookie cutter stuff that's out there being sold to the public. A practitioner will be able to sit with you and listen to your goals, your needs, your wants, your insurable interests, and try to customize this plan for you. The way that they structure this as well actually reduces the person that will help you's commission, the agent's commission. So because they're trying to maximize the cash value in these plans for you, insurance is a very, very key component of it, and there are uses for it. But the goal here is to grow your wealth and protect your wealth safely and securely and predictably, and that's why it's structured that way.
Is it legal with your insurance licensing and things of that nature for us to do like an exact example of, say, a $500,000 whole life cash policy and maybe, you know, what the premium would be and how it would be structured for somebody to have to pay? So that maybe someone listening will get the idea. Do I need to have $100,000 to bring to the table today, or is this the kind of thing I can bring, you know, $1,000 a month payment to, or even less than that if that's where I'm starting is less than that? Are you allowed to kind of go into some detailed examples like that, MC?
Yeah, I can say this, that I can start plans for around $300 a month. You can pay this monthly, quarterly, and yearly. Businesses are different. I have three plans. I pay them all actually differently, which is kind of funny now that I think about it. But it allows a lot of flexibility. So for $300 a month, you can start one of these. A very big part of utilizing this too, and which gives me really, really a lot of professional fulfillment, is legacy planning and family planning. And so we do a lot of college funding and college planning as well, because these whole life insurance policies do not count against your financial aid when you apply for that. So they don't take this into consideration where they do with 529 plans. So for infant and children plans, you know, for $150 a month, we can start those. But yeah, as far as an example, it's going to be a little bit difficult because it is life insurance. There's a ton of variables, age, the gender, the where you live, because insurance is pulling resources, right, to kind of like bear it down of the exact cost. But, I mean, for $300, $500, or $1,000 a month putting this away, you would start to build up a really nice sizable nest egg over a couple of years. I would say this too, that the first – how these plans are structured usually is the first couple of years, just with any investment that you're in, there's an accumulation phase where it builds a little slowly, then it starts to grow a little bit, and then there starts to be exponential growth. And, you know, I don't want to hammer the compound interest thing because it's been hammered over and over ad nauseum, especially in the financial planning arena, but compound interest isn't the eighth wonder of the world if there's other wealth eroding factors compounding with it too, such as taxes, fees, and all that stuff. So that's why these vehicles offer tax-free growth. And you will know exactly what you're going to have in your plan in 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20. So it makes planning for your investments really, really easy. A lot of my clients know exactly when they can purchase their first property, especially if it's turnkey that they're looking into, when they can purchase their second one, their third, so we can look and develop a plan of funding of what you will have available at what stages in this plan. So the exact specifics with money and what you will have in, then or when available is a little bit difficult because everybody's insurability is different and the ratings is different. There's just so many variables out there.
Are these tax deductible, these insurance premiums, or no?
No. This is a good question because this is a good point to bring up too. This is after-tax dollars going into this plan, and that's why it can grow tax-free in there. There's no contribution limits also like in Roths or other IRAs. This is outside the qualified plan arena. Nothing to do with that. Insurance was around a long time before the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and the IRS. But good question. After-tax dollars going in there. When you buy real estate with these plans too, just to clarify, this is not inside this vehicle. It's outside this vehicle, because that's a question I actually received this week as well from someone that he was listening to a presentation that I was doing. So it's outside you. You get to enjoy the tax benefits of your real estate and then dovetail it nicely with this vehicle together. I mean, from a tax philosophical standpoint, real estate is a fantastic vehicle to help with tax advantages, but you know, I always joke and say, please pay your taxes. I don't tell anybody not to pay your taxes, but you don't have to leave Uncle Sam a tip. And we like to pay taxes on the seed rather than the harvest.
You had mentioned one thing, and this will be my final question before we kind of switch gears. You had mentioned don't take on a risk they can't transfer to someone else, being one of the big lessons that you've learned from wealthy folks. Can you elaborate on that, maybe give an example or two of what helped you to learn that lesson?
Yeah, so as far as insurability, so for instance, if there is there's a house with a mortgage on it, for a simplified example, and you have a mortgage outstanding, say you have a wife and children, and you have a mortgage outstanding for, say, $300,000. That is definitely an insurable interest right there that wealthy people wouldn't even think twice about having insurance or life insurance that if something should happen to them, that house is taken care of and the family and the children, his wife and his children will not be put outside of that house. And they look at all aspects of their planning like that. I mean, a lot of these folks try to insure their net worths, basically. They try to insure income. So say, for instance, I'll use myself as an example. So I'm married. We have a baby on the way. You know, I'm around about 38 years old. I am 38 years old, not round about. But, yeah, so, I mean, the prime earning years in our lives statistically is around 45 to 55 years old. So a wealthy person would look at it and say, well, how can I protect my earning, my income, and ensure that value for my wife and my child if something should happen to me? Because why would I not want to be – I wouldn't want to carry that own risk and, you know, hopefully I'm alive for 30 years and I try to make as much money as I possibly can for myself and my family. I'd like to transfer that risk over to something else that if life should happen to me and I should, you know, things happen, right? Life happens. If something that should happen to me, I want my wife and my child to be taken care of, and there's a way to ensure that income to your family. There's a way to ensure your assets for your family and to pass it down through strategies that we teach to the next generation, because obviously there's a huge wealth transfer happening with the baby boomer generation passing down assets to the next generation too. But yeah, to stay on topic with your question, it's very, very important that they look at things a different way. You know, here's another good example. Warren Buffett, for instance, you read in the newspapers now a lot, oh my goodness, you know, George Soros lost X amount of money because the stock market did this, or gold did this, or Warren. Well, they look at their assets on their company statements, but these guys don't have insights. These financial writers don't have insights to their trading accounts. I guarantee you that those guys are protected regardless of what happens in the market. They probably made a lot of money where it shows maybe on the one side their public statement that they lost money. Maybe in their trading account, I wouldn't be surprised that there was a lot of protections through options to protect their downside, because they wouldn't leave themselves exposed out in the marketplace. The same with real estate, having insurance on your property, for instance, and then also having an umbrella insurance on top of that. You know, for a couple hundred dollars a year, for instance, you can have that to protect that side of you as well, that if there's a worst-case scenario and you have a tenant that has ideas to try and to get money in a different way from you, that you're protected and your family's protected and your assets are protected. Because once all those things are protected and the unknown variables that are out there are limited and reduced, that's when you can plan and really start ramping out and focus without having to worry about, you know, your assets that are not covered or protected or insured, your income that's not protected or insured, and then overall your human life value. So in a companies, for instance, they do the same thing with buy-sell agreements. That's done through insurance products as well. So there's many different ways, but the wealthiest families protect their downside, and they would never, ever, ever self-insure, because that's a word that's been thrown around. That just means you don't have any insurance. They won't self-insure themselves or carry on a risk that they can't transfer to another party or another insurance company.
appreciate you shedding a little bit of light on that. So we're going to switch gears here a little bit. You mentioned that you have been in the wealth management field for 2 years. So I'm going to ask you, is there any single idea, system, or strategy you've implemented over the last 12 to 24 months and experienced exponential growth as a result? That could be in any area of your business.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, my company has been around for 2 years. I've been in the wealth management field a little bit longer than that. But yeah, no, absolutely. So as far as a strategy that we've implemented, I think I just mentioned one too, that one of our partners that we were able to, one of the people that I do business with, they actually showed this strategy, and I've since then helped to implement this for several other clients of mine, of using the money that they would put into a tax escrow account to create an asset and pay their taxes, using the government's money, quote unquote, to build an asset that's going to grow for them over time and build their wealth with it. So there's a couple of examples like that. I would say that is definitely one that this has been in the last week. I've had a couple of cases like that. Reserve accounts set that up. But those are just some strategies that have helped my clients implement it. Business-wise, for the growth-wise, I would say that there's a lot of exciting stuff going on as far as just within my business, companies that I work with and people that I work with. So the one project I'll share when we launch that, so I don't want to give away too much of it yet, but there's a lot of really exciting stuff that we're working on.
Nice. And who would you identify as being the most successful real estate investor or developer? And could you also define why you would consider them successful?
Yeah, so I really like Ken McElroy. Your listeners might be familiar with him, the Rich Dad Advisor. So obviously, I am a very, very big fan of Robert Kiyosaki's books and the work that he's doing with his company and the Rich Dad Advisors. And in my real estate development and studying and trying to elevate my financial IQ just in the real estate arena, Ken McElroy challenges the way that I think, and I learn something new from him every single time he speaks of basically how to use other people's money and create more money and more cash flow for himself and his investors. So very, very, he puts out fantastic educational resources as well, teaching everything that he learns and implements. So he's definitely someone that I follow with great interest.
This might dovetail on that. Two or three book recommendations you've made most often?
This is a very good question. The first one, obviously, I would say is Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because I think that's one where we all have to start to try and change our mindset and expand our context before we fill it up with content. The other book, so Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a mindset book for me. The second book that I would recommend is The Creature from Jekyll Island by Mr. G. Edward Griffin. And this is a book that really woke me up and took me down the rabbit hole, educating me how the global financial system, central banking, and the global monetary system really works. Because whether we want to believe it or not, we are in a game here. We are in the money game. So I try to learn as much as I can about money and how the game works. And I think that book really explains everything, what money is, where money comes from, the history of banking, and also the history of central banks, especially in the United States. I don't think there's a lot of people that know that. That is a fascinating part of our history within itself, and the battle that's been raging since the founding of this country. So I would definitely recommend that. And then from a solution perspective, I would put down Becoming Your Own Banker by Mr. Nelson Nash, showing people how to take these banking principles and implement it in their own life. So also want to mention, Dan, if any of your listeners are interested in learning more about this concept and their interest was a little bit piqued, if they're interested, they can reach out to me and I will mail them a copy of Mr. Nelson Nash's book, Becoming Your Own Banker.
Nice. So, MC, if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom with your 18-year-old self, what would that single jewel be?
Before you spend a single cent on an investment, You've got to invest in your greatest asset, yourself. You will always be your single and great best asset ever out there. So you've got, as Tony Robbins would say, you have to build that machine. So especially in the times that we live in today, Dan, it's an extremely exciting time. Things are changing very rapidly, amazing technologies. But we have to understand that we have to be lifelong learners and constantly developing ourselves by improving our value to the world to serve others better. So I would definitely say keep investing in yourself. We never, ever arrive in knowledge. The quest and the search for knowledge is a lifelong journey. I would then also say learn and study everything you can about money, economics, and the global financial system and the monetary system. I think once I started realizing that and learning everything I can about that and found out how the game is really played, only then did I start to really understand what is going on, and I could position myself and my own wealth and my own businesses for it. And then I would say study the banking model. Study the banking model and implement the principles of this extremely powerful model within your own life, principles of leverage, turning your money over and over, and have multiple uses for the same dollar in your personal and business economy.
Cool. MC, if anybody's interested reaching out, getting a copy of Nelson Nash's book, or just having a conversation or figuring out more information about you, how can they find out more information about you and your companies?
A primary platform is cashflowninja.com. That's also where my podcast is on. You can reach out to me for the book, Becoming Your Own Banker by Mr. Nelson Nash, by emailing me at info@cashflowninja.com. And the website for my wealth management firm is valhallawealth.com. It's valhallawealth.com, V-A-L-H-A-L-L-A, and then wealth.com.
Great. I will make sure to put those websites in the show notes. The email will not be found in the show notes, just to protect your account from spam crawling robots all over the internet. I have a couple pages of notes, a lot of new ideas. I thank you for expanding my mind and coming on the show and taking time out of your day to share with our REI Diamond Show listeners here, MC.
Thank you so much, Dan. This was an awesome experience. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for your listeners out there listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. My business advisor often asks why I do the REI Diamond Show, seeing as how I don't use the show to promote coaching or sell any other type of products. And my answer is, and has always been, that I host the show to attract new business relationships. People who've discovered the REI Diamond Show often come out to our local networking events in person to come out, meet me, and meet some of the other Diamond Equity Investments team players. One thing leads to another, and we end up doing business, or in a few cases, we've formed new partnerships, even in other markets where I was not previously doing business before our connecting through the networking event. So the REI Diamond Show leads people to the networking events, which leads to new business relationships, which potentially and has in the past led to new businesses and partnerships being formed. So I invite you to join us at one of those upcoming networking events. And if you are interested in some more information about when and where those upcoming networking events are located, you can check out more information at www.reidiamonds.com. Are you interested in receiving a notification when I release the next episode? You can either sign up for email at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And if you are interested in buying or selling a deal from me, visit www.reidiamonds.com and click the link at the top of the page. I'm currently doing deals and offering deals in Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Chicago, Atlanta, and the Tampa Bay region in Florida. Finally, if you are enjoying the show and know someone else who might also enjoy the show, I'd like to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, forwarding this episode or another episode that might be more fitting for them over to them. I appreciate the referrals, and I appreciate you, my loyal REI Diamond Show listener. Dan Breslin here, and I'm out.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.